Hi there. Editor Simon here. Just a quick reminder to check your local fire safety regulations before you start a fire in any space.
Hi folks, if you want to get in touch with us, please email us at stovestop.benandbren@gmail.com. You can find that address somewhere in the notes for the programme, I think. Cheers.
Hello, this is Ben. I am in Quetico Provincial Park with my good friend, Brendan.
Hi, I'm Bren, and I'm also in Quetico Provincial Park, which is not in Scotland, but in Ontario, Canada. So for the first time, we have a stove stop with both of us in the same place. And our technical team can breathe a little sigh of relief and not having to stitch it together.
I think today we're going to be talking about the wondrousness that is both national and provincial park stoves. Some would call them fire pits.
They're definitely fire pits. They're not really stoves.
Why are we including it then today in our stove stop podcast?
Because if you're on a holiday in a Canadian provincial park in the summer, it's a pretty good question to ask, why do you need a stove at all? The park authority have set you up with a lovely fire pit with a grill. Maybe you just don't need to bring a stove.
Do you want to describe the fire pit, or should I?
I'm happy to describe it. So it's about 50 or 60 centimetres across, maybe nearly a couple of feet in old money, in diameter, sort of mostly circular, about 8 inches high, made out of mild steel with holes punched in it all the way around for ventilation. And then at one end, it's got a taller box section that goes right the way across the 60 centimetre width with a grill on top, maybe 5 or 6 very thick bars. You can lift it up out of the way, or you can plonk it down in the way so you can have a fire. You can grill things. You can put pans on top of it. You can boil kettles. Pretty good.
What has been our most recent cooking experience with the fire pit?
Possibly not the best one, although the results were very nice. We did do fired potatoes. Well, I say we, neither me nor Ben did fired potatoes last night, but another member of the team did fired potatoes, which were delicious. Did them in tin foil, straight in the embers. Could have done that on a fire anywhere. And apart from the odd breakage of tin foil, that worked pretty well.
Yeah, they were pretty tasty fired potatoes. We haven't, and we may do tonight, we haven't yet cooked on the grill. I've done sausages and meat and those kinds of things in the past. I quite like the national park versions of these, because in one corner of that box area that you were describing, they have a flat metal portion as well as the grill portion. And then you can really easily, without getting totally filthy, you can really easily put your pot or your pan or your kettle, and then take the radiant heat from the metal, and it goes up, and fairly quickly you get either a kettle of boiling water or a pot, or you could even use a fry pan or something similar than that.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. It's been a while. So yeah, these are quite nice, but don't use your best crocs, really. It's definitely a good trip to Value Village over here and get 2 or 3 cheap pans.
And for those in other spaces, Value Village is a second-hand store, that kind of space. We did in fact go to that store before we came on this trip, and we found a little Dutch oven, cast iron Dutch oven piece that we're going to use tonight, I think, some of our sausages will go in there, and some of our sausages will go direct on the grill. We'll see how things go.
That's good. Sausages always good.
The one thing to say, my kind of critical hat, would be, obviously, as with previous conversations, you can't use it when there's a fire ban, just because of risk of setting forest fires in and around where you're staying. The other criticism is that you have to absolutely make sure the wood you're burning is
firewood and not things
dry.
You've just chopped down.
No.
And you also have to use wood from your local campsite. They are quite rightly very keen not to have people transporting firewood from one place to another place, and transporting little critters and stuff like that from one place to another place. So the thing is, you go to the campsite, you buy the firewood there. You might think it's good value, or you might grumble a bit about the price, but that's the deal. And then you get your fire pit.
And when I'm thinking back to my time at Banff National Park out in Alberta, you actually purchase a fire permit per night on top of your camp fee.
Oh, wow.
And then they just had this great big stack of wood they'd taken out as part of their management of the forest there. And you went and grabbed whatever, as much or a little wood as you wanted.
I like that. That's nice.
Again, maybe not as carbon neutral as some processes, but still a fun thing to do when you're on holiday, enjoying the camping space.
Yeah, and I think there's low carbon versus mental health boost, and I think one of the biggest things about going camping is having a fire, and we were worried there might be a fire ban in place, and it does make a bit of a difference to our anticipation if you think that's going to happen. Mm. Ben, how often do you get fire bans?
Usually depends on the weather, obviously, but usually probably the last 5 or 6 years there have been fire bans in different portions of northwestern Ontario every summer. Last year we were actually, my son and I were in this park canoe camping out in the backcountry, and there was a fire ban then, so one of the many other stoves, I think we used the Tranja, came in very handy because we couldn't cook at the shoreside or using the fire pits, just because there was no way to create the heat without, you know, breaching the fire ban.
Yeah, so I guess the other major issue, especially if you're coming from the Scottish side of the equation, is what do you do with your provincial fireplace if it rains? But you guys have that all sorted out too, I think, Ben.
Well, so there's two options. One is you just don't use it at all and you stay in your tent or your camper van. But I prefer to put up a great big tarp. Usually, most often, I use the 20 by 50 foot tarp with a number of different positions with the ropes, so it's high up enough above the fire pit. I remember one of our first camping trips years and years ago, we put a great big found shore rock on the grill and then used a piece of wood above that so the wood wouldn't catch fire. And propped up the tarp so we'd have a good kind of flow through of air while also being protected from the rain.
Was that part of Sleeping Giant? Was that the backwards bit?
Yeah, that was at Tea Harbour Sleeping Giant Provincial Park. So the last piece, you know, health and safety Ben, family doctor Ben would say, is you don't want to be totally enclosed when you're having these fires. You know, all that carbon monoxide, probably a little sooty in your lungs too. But more importantly, at the end of the night when you're finished with your fire, you can't just leave it grizzling along at a low burn.
Yeah.
You've got to make sure it's completely out before you go to bed.
Which can take a lot of doing. You often think you've put it out, it's hissed a lot, and you give it a stir, and then 10 minutes later you can see a couple of sparky bits. So you do have to be quite careful and then stir it properly.
You know, one of the other advantages of the metal with the holes in the metal around the fire pit is you can, without blocking the holes, you can put possibly damp firewood up against the metal so it dries out nicely.
We've been doing that, haven't we, this time?
But you have to make sure you move all of that wood well away from the fire pit before you go to bed.
Yeah.
Just in case a spark will jump. We'll see how the cooking goes tonight, but I am optimistic that we could get our fire potatoes for sure, and then we'll have an experiment with our various sausage options.
Sounds good to me.
Well, thanks very much for having this conversation.
Yeah, nice to chat in person, Ben.
It's fantastic to see you.
Cheers.
Bye.